Okay.
Really?
Yeah, they canceled. Walk out.
They canceled school. Okay. So last time I said we were going to talk about whether we can use MISA for tuition. But before we get to that, when I was going through the sugi, I realized that there was a topic that we needed to cover beforehand, which is using MISA for child support. Because that's sort of a broader topic of which chinuch and education is a subset of. So in terms of child support, as we'll see, there's different categories. In general, in halacha, we have a gadol and a katan. We have somebody that's below 12 or 13 and somebody that's above. When it comes to financial support, though, it gets a little bit murkier. We'll see. Yes. So we'll see. So as we'll see, there was
to support your kids until this
from 2 to 22, unless you get them out of the house early,
or 32 or 42. But yes, as we'll see, there is a concept of a 6-year cutoff point, and then some people expand it even beyond a gadol. Or gedola.
Which I do nowadays.
And then there's also a concept of...
Yeah, married, they move back in.
And there's also a concept of somech al shulchan aviv, which is that even if theoretically you have the capability of being financially independent, if at the end of the day you're living in your parents' house or in your in-laws' house, so then there is a certain financial arrangement that you have with them.
So it seems to be one way.
So it doesn't exactly work like that, but it's close to it. So let's see the Gemara. Most of these Gemaras come from Ksubis. So we'll start off with the Gemara in source number one. Another one of the Takanas Usha. Right, so we spent a few weeks talking about the Takanas Usha, about not spending a fifth of your money for a mitzvah. So this is another one of those Takanas Usha. So at the beginning, in source number one, Ksubis Memtesa Medbeis, Omar Reish Lakish Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chanina, Beusha Hiskinu. So they made a takana in Usha, Sheyehe Adam Zan Es Banav Ves Binosav Kishahein Kitana. So there seems to be a takana that the sages established in Usha that a person has to support their sons and daughters while they are Kitanim, while they are young. So what does that mean? What does little mean?
Obviously people were not doing it.
What do you need a takana for?
Okay, yeah, so these are all very good questions.
But
so
nothing related to this.
Well, no, we'll see that it is, okay. because that's important. That it's important to realize, meaning the first question we always have to ask ourselves is, well, if they made a takana, that the implication is they weren't doing that.
Right.
So we mentioned when we were going through the earlier takanas usha, that there was this new, I guess you could say, the Christian sentiment of giving away all of your money and then relying on the community to support you. So theoretically, you could say that that's what this was as well. That basically they said, all right, you know, I'll take the very bare minimum that I need, but for my kids can go around collecting in town. We're all poor anyway. So,
stupid questions. Aren't these the same when I bought him who had the, who talked about the other one of
Yosar Mechoma, him of Azbez.
Yeah,
so this is the exact same Rabbanim. It may have been slightly earlier or later. Takanas Usha were made over a period of time. But theoretically, it could be the exact same Rabbanim, and it could be, as I said, just said, for the same reason. That people, even if they were rich or poor, they wanted to essentially give away all their money and then rely on communal funds. So that could have been a reason. Another child labor. If people are poor, so the earlier you can push your kids into the workforce, the better. And okay, if your kids are working, then maybe they should have to just eat what they kill. You know, they should, whatever money they make, that's what they get. And so Chazal may have needed to step in and to say, no, doesn't matter what they earn or not, you are obligated to support them and not have them rely on communal funds, even though they can be working at that time.
That's child labor was a real issue in those days.
Yeah. Especially if they weren't landowners, meaning if you are, if you're on a farm, everybody works together. If you're not on, if you don't own land, like many of those Jews did not, so then it gets really tricky. You know, they're going off to work somewhere, and they didn't have factories, but something. Yeah. So that could be another reason. A third reason is, and this I don't know if we have so much evidence for, but it could also be a breakdown in family, meaning. Let's say a woman, you know, there's a husband and wife, they have kids, and then the husband gets divorced. You know, and they get divorced. So you have to pay the wife ksuba. But what about the kids? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know what custody arrangement the kids had, but usually they often stayed by the mother, so you have to figure that in. So that could also have been part of the motivation. Regardless, they made this takana. Then the Gemara asks something. Iboi luhu. Hilchas kavase, oh, ain halacha kavase. Is the halacha like this or not? Which is, again, a very interesting question to ask. Meaning, this question was written hundreds of years after Usha. Like, the Gemara was written hundreds of years after Usha. And yet it's asking, is the halacha like that or not? The implication being, it wasn't really settled. There were some people, at least, that felt maybe that shouldn't be the case. So Tashma, come and hear a proof. Kiyava asu likame de Rev Yehuda. When they came before Rev Yehuda, Amar lehu, Ya'arod yilada va'avne masa shadya. The jackal, the standard interpretation of what a yarod is, bears offspring and casts the obligation to feed them on the residents of a town, meaning that doesn't happen. You know, even jackals, which are, you know, vicious animals, they'll still take care of their young and not foist them on the community. So obviously, you know, we should do that too. Ki avo asu lekame de Rav Chista. When they came before Rav Chista, Amar lehu, he would say about somebody that refused to pay child support, kafule asita bitsurba, overturn like a box or something like that, and put him on it. Vilekum vilema urva boy b'nei vahu gavra lo boy b'nei. Even a raven, which is a impure bird and is one that is has a reputation of being callous to their kind, will still take care of its children, and this person doesn't. Meaning, publicly shame them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then the Gemara goes on a little bit of a tangent about ravens, but before we get to that. There's another tactic which it doesn't mention, which we mentioned could be about tzedakah, which is forcing. Oh. Right? If the court says you owe child support, they can just take money out of your bank account. Chazal had that power. They said, if we believe somebody should be forced to pay tzedakah, then we should. And we can theoretically go down and take stuff from or force you to pay up. It doesn't say that here. It says, what can we do? We can publicly embarrass him, we can harass him, we can defame him, we could do all the emotional and verbal abuse we want, but we can't take his money.
And you also can't put him in chayram or anything else.
That's the same thing, putting him in chayram.
Yeah, so it doesn't talk about chayram. It doesn't talk about chayram. I don't know. But what's very clear is that we can't take his money and force him to pay. Yeah.
The translation is let the father stand up and say about himself. So he's being forced to say something. It's not the people.
So there's different interpretations in the Gemara. This is one is basically you force the husband to say it. Another is you have somebody from like the city council say it about this person. Basically, like you're hanging up a poster. Yeah. That's what the translation would be. Regardless, forcing him to pay is not one of them. So now we'll just finish up with this raven tangent. V'orve boy b'nei, but do ravens really care about their kids? V'haksiv, livnei orev asher yikro. It says the pasuk where it seems like they do. Lo kashya ha b'chivuri ha b'akume. There's a difference between black and white ravens. Okay. Now we get to another one. Ki hava asi likame de Rava. When he came before Rava, a person that wouldn't want to pay. Amar le niche lach de mitazne bineich bitstaka. He would again verbally say, like, how could you want your kids to be sustained by tzedakah. Vilo amran, but we only said this halacha, ella delo amid, when they're not wealthy. Aval amid, kafinan le al karche. But when they are wealthy, we are able to force them. Ki hod de rava kafke le rabbi nasan bar ami va'apik mine dalid me azuzi litzdakah. And then we come to our story about forcing somebody to give tzedakah. So the Gemara says, if a person is not wealthy, now again, we have to decide what wealthy means, but if a person is not wealthy, so we can verbally abuse them to try to get them to support their kids, but we can't take their money. If they are wealthy, then we can, just like we can force people to give tzedakah. The implication is, then, is that supporting even one's own children is what? Is tzedakah. That's what, again, just from this piece, from this Gemara alone, what it sounds like is that there is a takana by Chazal to support your kids when they are ketanim, mm-hmm. and that obligation, that takana, is essentially not legally binding. Right, the takana is not saying you have to do it, because if you have to, we could force you. Mm-hmm. Instead, what the you have to is you really should, and if you choose not to, we're going to publicly shame you for it. And in addition to that, if you are capable of giving tzedakah, we're going to mandate that you give, we're going to make you give tzedakah, and we're going to mandate that you give the tzedakah to your kids.
On so, which halacha is Rava going?
I'm sorry?
On which halacha is Rava going? Is he going on Rechizah, or is he going on Rabbi
Eloy? It's a good question. This is most the Mefarshim understand that he's going on Rabbi Eloy. Most Mefarshim understand that he's going on Rabbi Eloy. He's talking about the general Takan. It's a good question. But that's the standard interpretation. Now,
But, you know, a simple reading of that statement is simply analogous to the fact that the Chacham, that the Beis Din, if you like, have the power to force somebody to give tzedakah. They also have the authority to force somebody to support his children, but it's not called tzedakah. It's just an analogy.
Okay, so it's a good point. What you could say is that the Gemara is essentially bringing a mashal. It's bringing just an analogy of saying, just like we can force you here, we can force you there. We'll see from other Gemaras that that does not seem to be where it's, you know, the implication. But in addition to that, a question you could ask using that interpretation is, why pick tzedakah then? Beis Din can force people to pay any obligation that they have. Meaning, if somebody owes somebody money, I can just take your money. So if Beis Din made a takana that you have to support your kids, so it's just like I owe somebody money. If Beis Din paskins I owe somebody money, they can just force me to pay.
So you're saying it's not stuck in there?
No, I'm saying, therefore, I'm saying
they're allocating the money to a certain.
So I'm saying that it is tzedakah, because otherwise, if it wasn't tzedakah, you wouldn't bring an analogy from tzedakah, you would bring an analogy from anything. Meaning, if I steal from you, or I borrow money from you, or I damage you, and I owe you money because of that, Beis Din is authorized to take from my bank account and withdraw it and transfer it to yours.
But it's not that strong.
What do you mean it's not that strong?
In other words, it's if the situation is such that the example they're giving.
Ah, okay. So you're saying now that the emphasis. He's a very rich man,
and they're trying to get more money. Presumably, he did give some tzedakah, but he didn't give commensurate with his wealth.
Ah, okay. So now that's it. That's another layer, which is, you know, theoretically, you could have somebody that may give a little bit of child support, but doesn't give what's deemed needed based on what they're capable of giving. So you're saying that's what we're learning from tzedakah. What we're learning from tzedakah is not the obligatory nature of it, but the fact that Beis Din is authorized to assess how much I'm capable of giving and then force me to pay based on their assessment.
Right.
It could be. The question then is, well, why isn't that in Takana Susha? Meaning, where does it say that in Takana Susha?
It doesn't. But,
okay, so
we're interpreting.
So
the Gemara is coming along and saying, "Look, this is the general principle that Takanas Usha states, And we're going to expand on that or elaborate on it to say this is what... It's not just that you have to give a little bit to support your children, but you also have to give sufficient.
Sufficient. Okay. That could be. You're right. It could be. Before we move on to another Gemara, though...
Well, you talked about stalker. You have to give stalker for somebody relevant to the way they...
Based on their means. So before we move on to the next Gemara, there's one other question which we have to ask, which is, what does a katan mean? So if you look at Rashi, Rashi gives perhaps the simplest interpretation in source number two, kishehen katanim, ad sheyaviu saros, until they become a biological adult, which is 13 or 12. So according to Rashi, the takanas usha mandates or strongly encourages financial support up until they are 12 or 13 years old.
It's a cutoff point.
That's the cutoff point. Now, let's just see the next Rashi. Bal Karcho, Rashi says you can force them to pay up if they're wealthy. Lo yehei elet staka ba'oma. So Rashi understands that it refers to just staka in general. Vafilu einan banav, meaning they can force you to pay it to whoever. It's just when you have your own kids, they choose to redirect it there. Mm-hmm. Tosfos has a different interpretation of what a katan is. If you look in source number three, the Shita Mekubetzes, one of the Rishonim there says, Kishehem Kitanim, Pirish Rashi Zal Ad Sheyaviu Saros. Right? So Rashi, we just said, believes that a katan means anybody below 12 or 13. V'ika lemeidak. Now, we do have to ask, Deha'amora Darko Lefarish, that term of ad sheyavi shtei saros, until they produce two pubic hairs, which is the biological definition of an adult, that phrase is used in the Gemara time and time again. And so if Rashi really holds that, then why didn't the Gemara say that? V'hilkach, havelei lemasnisin lemisni shei adam zanes bana vespinosav ad sheyaviu saros. So why doesn't it? The Gemara very rarely says gadol or katan, in the context of family support, ksuba, many legal things. It says, ad sheyaviu saros. So, v'tirtzu betosfos. So, Tosfos gives a different pshat. De'lehachi nakat kishehen kitanim. The reason why Takanas Usha says, while they're kitanim, l'diyuke de'kitane kitanim, chayiv l'kule alma, kedamrinan besof afalpi. So, there's a new category that Tosfos is raising, which is called ketane ketanim, very little kids. Now, very little kids, everybody agrees, whether you hold of takanas usha or not, everybody agrees that you have to support that age group. And so the reason why takanas usha said ketanim, and not just until you become a biological adult, is because it's essentially saying we're adding on to a pre-existing, universally accepted idea. So whatever... little kids are, that everybody agrees is non-negotiable, and theoretically, even if you're poor, Beis Din could force you to support them. Older, younger kids, again, we don't know the age, but older, younger kids, until they become biological adults, that is strongly encouraged, and if you're capable of giving tzedaka, Beis Din obligates you to prioritize your funds towards them. So Tosfos says this new category of ketane ketanim comes from another Gemara in Ksubis. What is that Gemara? So now let's look at source number four. Darash Rabbi Ula Rabba Apischa de Bnei Nesia. So there was a drasha. Afal pisha amru ein adam zan esbana vespinosav kishehem ketanim. Even though there is an opinion which says that you don't need to support your kids when they're minors.
What are they supposed to do? Starve to death?
They're supposed to work. They're supposed to go to work.
Okay. Then it becomes very clear that they're talking about child labor.
Yeah, exactly. They're supposed to go. Takanas Usha. Oh, you're saying that was the meaning. That was the impetus for Takanas Usha to get rid of child labor. It could be. That could be. I don't know.
But anything the child earns is supposed to go to the parent.
Right. So as we'll see in Gemaras, there's an arrangement both between a husband and a wife, as well as with kids, even if they're above bar and bas mitzvah, that if you are somech al shulchan aviv, or somech al shulchan baal, if you rely on your husband or father's financial support, Any money that you make automatically goes back to the husband slash father. Mm-hmm. So that's what would happen under Takanas Usha. Under Takanas Usha, they said that, you know, the kids can go to work. You could ask your kids to go to work if you want, but whether they make money or not, you're obligated to support them. So even, the Gemara says, even if you don't hold of Takanas Usha, where you have to support minors, Avalzan Kitane Kitanim, this is where Tosfos gets his category, that you have to support your very little kids. Ad Kama, how old is very little? Ad Ben Sheish, until they are 6 years old. So this is where the 6 year cutoff point comes from. Tosfos holds, or at least from this Gemara, it says that regardless of what you hold about Takanas Usha, every single parent is obligated to support their kid until 6 years old. Kidder Rav Asi, like Rav Asi said, Amar Rav Asi, Katan Ben Sheish, Yotze Be'iruv Imo. A Katan, a minor who is 6 years old, can follow the Eruv of his mother. What is that talking about? So generally, what we have is an Eruv Tchumen. So on Shabbos, when there's no Eruv around, you are able to walk 2,000 amos. Now, a way you can theoretically extend that is by creating an Eruv Tchumen. What that means is you basically take some food, you put it somewhere, and you say, that is my home for Shabbos, and you get 2,000 amos from that point. Now, who is included in that Eruv? So let's say I have guests. Let's say I have kids. Let's say I have siblings. So the halacha is anybody that is legally included in your food, so they're automatically included in that Eruv. If you're just visiting, so you have to do something to participate. So either they add food or you give a little bit of money to defray the costs of the food. You have to be mishtatef. You have to join. So now, theoretically, let's say you have a husband and wife. Maybe they're traveling in different directions, or maybe they're just not on the best terms, and they share custody with the child. So the father has an Eruv in one direction, and the mother has an Eruv in another direction, and now they have a kid. So whose Eruv is the kid included? So what's his name? Rav Asi said that until he's 6 years old, a katan, a minor, is included in his mom's Eruv. What would the rationale be for that?
He always wants his mommy.
Yeah. The mother was the key figure of support at that time. So therefore, all things being equal, unless you explicitly state otherwise, the kid follows the mother. So Mimai, so how do we know that? What's the proof? Midakatani, because we learned in a Mishnah, Haisa Meinika, if she is nursing, Pochsin La Mima'aseyadeha, Umosifin La Almazonosea. Basically, if a woman is nursing and feeding and responsible for nurturing a child, so we have to add on to the allowance that her husband gives in terms of what his ksuba mandates. The ksuba mandates that you're supposed to give X amount of support to your wife. So if she's nursing, so you have to give extra to allow her to pay for whatever, you know, nutrients she needs in order to nurse this other child. Right, so I skipped that part when I was translating, meaning the arrangement of Masa Yadeha and Mizonos is that if the woman makes money, we deduct whatever money is being used to support her from her husband, and it's just, you know, we essentially launder the money that way. But any excess money, she gets to keep. So what we're saying here is that if she's nursing a child, we deduct more from her Masa Yadayim and then resend it back.
But what if she doesn't work?
So the husband still has to pay.
Doesn't say that.
Well, right, again, we're talking about, this statement is talking about a case where she works, but even if not, meaning what the Ksuba document says is that whether you choose to work or not, I'm obligating myself to support you. If you choose to work, so I have the right to take whatever money you make to cover the allowance I'm giving you. Regardless, The Gemara says, when there's a kid involved for nursing, so you have to pay extra. My time, but what's the reason why the husband has to pay extra? Lav mishum deboy lemechal bahada, that she needs to feed her kids, so they need extra money. So the Gemara goes back and forth. Dilma decholahi. No, maybe it's not because she has to feed her child. Maybe it's just nursing makes her weaker, and so you're essentially paying for extended medical care or disability or something like that. So imkain. Lisni im haisa chola, so let it say that. My im haisa meinika. Why do we say a specific case of nursing? It could be any time that she's weak. Vidilma hakamash malan distameinikos cholos ninu. Maybe it's trying to teach us that definitionally a woman who is nursing is considered to be a chola, and so therefore the husband has to automatically amp up support. Also, this is just a proof. There's a famous opinion of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Many people that are from Brisker families or students of the Brisker family follow this, that now any woman that is nursing or could potentially be nursing or could potentially be pregnant is considered to be a chola and therefore does not need to fast any of the minor fasts. So nursing, theoretically, you could nurse for up to 2 years. So at least at one point, Rabbi Willig was a proponent of that shita. I don't know if he always follows it, but there's a family who my family is friends with, Kenai Nahara. They had, I think, 8 kids or 9 kids. And so they were talmidim of Rabbi Willig, who at that point at least paskind like Rav Soloveitchik did. And so for like the first 20 years of marriage, she never fasted except for Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. But again, this is where this Gemara comes from, that nursing takes a toll. So Itmar, Amar Bisho ben Levi, Mosif en lo yayin, sha yayin yafa l'chalav. No, what it means is just that we have to add in a certain stipend for wine because that's helpful for milk production. Okay, so from this Gemara, we have a second category called Ketane Ketanim, which is defined as less than 6 years old, 0 to 6. So the question that Tosfos is dealing with is, how do you reconcile these two Gemaras? How do you reconcile this first Gemara about Takanas Usha, which talks about Ketanim and seems to say, well, it's a good idea, you should support them, we strongly encourage it, if you don't, we can't force you to pay, and then this other one, which basically says you need to. So Tosfos essentially breaks it up into two categories. Tosfos says that there's 0 to 6 and 6 to 12, or 13. So 0 to 6... non-negotiable, you have to support. 6 to 12 or 13, that is strongly encouraged. Takanas Usha says you should. And if you have tzedakah, that has to go to them if you refuse to pay. So that's how Tosfos sort of deals with those two categories. Now, let's just look at one more Gemara, also in Ksubis. This is more of a homiletic Gemara, but it's very important for definitions. So the Gemara says, Ashrei shomrei mishpat osei tzedaka b'choleis. It's a pasuk in Tehillim. Happy or praiseworthy are those that keep justice and give tzedaka at all times. So what does that mean? V'chi efshar lasos tzedaka b'choleis? Can you really give tzedaka every second of the day? Darshu raboseinu shebi Yavne. So our rabbis in Yavne darshan. Now, again, let's keep in mind, where does Yavne fit in with regards to Usha? Well, according to the Gemara, both before and after. So the Gemara, when we were talking about the history of Usha, we said that the Gemara believes that they actually went back and forth. They went from Yavne to Usha, and then Usha to Yavne, then Yavne back to Usha. Most secular historians reject that and just say it was Yavne to Usha and that was it. We talked about different ways we could reconcile it, but it's just interesting how this Gemara will relate to Takanas Usha. So just keep that in mind. Va'amri la Rabbi Eliezer, and some say no, it wasn't the rabbis in Yavne, it was a different rabbi. It was Rabbi Eliezer. Ze hazon banav ubinosav kishehen kitanim. This refers to somebody that supports their kids when they're ketanim. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni Omar, This refers to somebody that fosters, that adopts and fosters children. Somebody that adopts an orphan and marries them off. Gahon va'osher beveso v'tzidkaso omedes law. The pasuk continues about wealth and riches are in his house, and his charity endures forever. Rav Huna v'Rav Chista chadam arzeh halomei Torah umelamda. This is somebody that learns Torah and teaches it, meaning you get to keep your riches and still share it with others at the same time. V'chadam arzeh kosev Torah nevim uksuvim umashilam lacherim. You start a lending library of svarim where you still gain and other people can as well. Now, this Gemara calls child support tzedakah. So, even taking Tosfos' explanation. So, let's take Tosfos' explanation of Takonas Usha. That 6 to 12 or 13 is not super obligatory. So, maybe that's what this Gemara is referring to. This Gemara could be calling tzedakah raising children and supporting them even beyond the minimum age that you're required to support them. Meaning everybody says you have to support them till 6. 6 to 12 or 13, we strongly encourage it. That's called tzedakah though, with the implication being it's above and beyond what's strictly required. And therefore what? You can use Meiser money for it. As we said last time, that Meiser money can't be used to pay for obligations, but if it's something extra, then you can. So even though there's a takanas usha, even though we strongly encourage you to do it, since we're not forcing the money out of your hand, and the only time we do is because of tzedakah, then theoretically you could use Meiser money for it. As we'll see, though, there is another opinion that disagrees and says, no, you can't take this Gemara literally. You cannot take this Gemara literally. It just means that it's a nice thing to do. And the proof to that is, I didn't have this over here, it's a different Gemara in Bava Basra, which says that let's say the authorities come and forcibly take away your money for taxes for public goods. So the Gemara says that's also called tzedakah. So then that gets into a whole, we'll talk about this when we talk about Meiser and taxes, but there's a whole discussion can you use Meiser money to pay taxes? Not about if you can deduct it. Can you use Meiser money to pay taxes? Because what do taxes pay for? Oh, some of it, at least, goes for communal things. It pays for social welfare programs. It pays for insurance. It pays for Medicare, Medicaid. It pays for things that poor people need. So maybe you could make the argument that that's called tzedakah. And everybody says no. It's not. There's a question if I can deduct that from my Meiser, if I can deduct that as a write-off when calculating Meiser. But nobody says I can use Meiser money to pay taxes. So therefore, people say the same thing over here. Even though the Gemara calls that tzedakah, if they force you, you still get reward. Yeah, you get reward because you're helping the community out. But that's not called tzedakah. It's just meant tzedakah is just like a catchphrase, a colloquial phrase to say you did something nice with the money. So the same thing here. Yes, you're obviously obligated to support your kids. That's not called tzedakah. It's just called listening to what the sage has said by Takanas Usha. So as we'll see, there's different opinions as to read this Gemara. So how do we paskin? So if you look at source number 6, this is the Shulchan Aruch in Evan HaEzer. The Shulchan Aruch in Evan HaEzer says, Chayiv Adam Lazun Bonov Ubinosav Ad Sheyu B'nei Sheish. You have to support your kids up until they're 6 years old. Afilu Yesh Lahem Nechasim Shenaflu Lahem Mibes Avi Imam. Even if they are independently wealthy, they inherited money from some trust fund on their mother's side. Right, because if it's really tzedakah, then if they don't need it, I shouldn't have to pay for it. So what is this obligation then to support my kids? It's part of married life. It's part of family life. When Chazal say you have to support your wife, you have to support your family as well. Umisham va'elech, but after 6, zanon kitakonas chachamim, you have to support them as the sages decreed, ad sheyigdalu, until they get older. V'im lo ratza, If you don't want to, gorimbo, you can yell at him. Umachlimino so, and you can embarrass him. Upotrino, and you can, you know, push him around. Vimlo ratza machrizin alav bitzibor. And if he still doesn't want to, you can publicly shame him. V'omrim ploni achzarihu. This person is a callous person. Veino rotze lozen banav, and he doesn't want to support his kids. V'harehu pochos me'ov tame. And he's worse than an impure bird. Shehuzan efrochav. That nevertheless supports its kids. V'ein kofino so lezona. But we can't actually force him to pay. B'medvar mamurim, b'she'eno amud, we're talking about a case where he's not wealthy. Aval imhaya amud, if he is, she'yeshlo mamon haroi liten tzedaka hamisapekes lahen. So what is the definition of wealthy? It's subjective. If he has enough money to pay them, if he has enough money to support his kids, he's called a wealthy person. The implication being, and this is the crazy part, when the Takanas Usha was instituted, and we said that we don't force you to pay unless you're able to afford it, that means that Takanas Usha was talking about somebody that couldn't afford it. That means that we're talking about somebody that was so poor that couldn't support his kids. The Gemara says, you still have to find a way to support your kids. That's what Takanas Usha was. So we're saying that though, if they have enough money to pay to support his kids, then what happens? Motzi and mimenu bal karcha, we can forcibly take it. Mishum tzedaka as tzedaka, vizonenoso ad sheyigdalu. So the Shulchan Aruch is ambiguous. The Shulchan Aruch says ad sheyigdalu, until they get older. So again, what does that mean? Does it mean till 12 or 13, or does it mean, I don't know, something more? The literal definition, or the easiest definition, is up until 6 you're obligated, and when you become a biological adult, that's it, you're on your own. It's nice if your parents want to support you after that, but you are under no obligation whatsoever, and therefore, if I want to use tzedakah, I can. There's no problem with me paying for anything for my kids, theoretically, after they're 6 years old, and using my Meiser money for it, which is a huge nafkamina. Mm-hmm. You know, nowadays, when kids are living in the house till much later than that, or at least you're supporting them, I could be using my Meiser money for that. So that means nobody would give any stuck on that. you know how much yeshiva, again, we'll get to yeshiva tuition, but just food for an adolescent boy. Like, how much money is that? What?
Eben Ezra was written in the early Middle Ages.
Yeah, 1500s.
Child labor was prevalent then.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it was. Somebody who was raised in the 21st century wouldn't be masculine this way anymore.
Yeah, so the question which we have to talk about now is what does that mean for us now? Meaning, if the reason is purely just a biological cutoff, then okay, facts have changed, but Chazal's Takana didn't change. Mm-hmm. Had they been around now, they would have expanded it maybe. But Lemaisa, they didn't. Or if it has nothing to do with biology per se, and that was just sort of a sociological cutoff point, then maybe it's different. So look at source number 7. This is a tshuva, the Igros Moshe. The Igros Moshe brings another Gemara in Ksubas. Tehine, b'Ksubas daf samach dalad matzinu, shemechuyev liten lehoisha midin mezonos, chad su'uda yeseira. That in addition to providing funds for a woman to pay for her own food, you also need to give her an extra meal's worth, o gam tarte, o tlas, or two or three extra, l'orche uparche, for guests, if she wants to host. You know, so sometimes in rabbinic contracts, you get a hospitality stipend, that the shul agrees to reimburse X amount of money to host guests at your table. So the same thing is true over here, where a woman, even if she's divorced or widowed, she gets, or if they're living separately and the husband is supporting her, she is entitled to not only food for herself, but also to play hostess. Shalachora tamua, ha'en mechuyev liten la'ashetachalek litzdaka. So I don't understand. she doesn't have the right to go to her husband and say, I want to make a donation. You know, she has to use her own money for that. So why is this different? Meaning, why do we host? What's the mitzvah of hechnasas archim? It's tzedakah. It's chesed. So why do I have to? Why is the husband obligated to finance her stuff? That's her own business. Vitzarech lomar. Sir Moshe says shekevan shehudavar shekol echad nosein imizdamein lo. Since this is just a universal norm that everybody does, hu bichlal chiyev mizonoseha. That's part of what living means. The ein yachal lomar lashetiach zaris velotis bayish velotitein. Like, you can't say, oh, that's on you. You have to be this callous person and be embarrassed turning a potential guest or poor person away. No, just part of normal societal living is the ability to host people. Vizehu raya gedola leharan sof perech afal pi shekosav bitam shezon kitane kitanim shu ad sheishanim. Mishum shekevan shein nigrarim achareha I efshar lo lahamid atzma shelo tazun osa. So the Ran, we never really gave an explanation in the Mefarshim. I asked you, why does a woman have to, why do you have to support somebody that's less than six? And we all basically said, because who else is going to? Like, that's just part of life, that they're not capable of fending for themselves. The Ran takes it a little bit further and says that because the woman is, because they rely on the mother, so now the mother has additional obligations. It's as if you're supporting the mother. The language of the Ran is actually like they're one body. So when the husband is paying spousal support, part of spousal support is child support. Umidin mizonoseh shelo naguba. And the reason why that we why your person has to pay out money to this is because he's supporting his wife. Sharei chazinan shemechuyev liten la bad orcheu parche. So Rav Moshe says it's the same thing over here. So since when it comes to the ability to host guests, the husband has to pay, then kol shekein bibonea, then obviously he should be able to support his kids. He should have to support his kids. Shelo yachal lomer lashetiach zaris. Because it's impossible that she should just be so callous and say, I can't support my kids. And therefore he says, it's the same reason. So now, he first anticipates a question. There's another Gemara, which we paskin like, which is that a child born out of wedlock, you also have to support. Husband is obligated, or a father, biological father, is obligated to support a child born out of wedlock, even if they are not married now or ever. The question then becomes, well, that seems to go against what Rav Moshe says. Rav Moshe says the whole reason why I have to pay child support at that age is because I'm obligated to support my wife. I'm not obligated to support somebody that I just had a one night stand with. That's not spousal support. So why do I have to pay child support in that case then? So Rav Moshe gives two suggestions. Either because of mazik, either because you damaged this woman, you caused her a financial loss because now the burden of child support is on her. So you caused it, so you have to pay. The other, which is even, and I wouldn't say more of a stretch, but he says just like by a prostitute can legally demand money from you in Beis Din. That's the story of Yehuda and Tamar. That she can demand money for the affair. So too, part of paying for a prostitute is if a child is born out of that union, you have to support them. Those are Ramosha's two explanations for why you have to pay child support for
some. Simple Gemara person, you're married when
So no, the Gemara is saying even if you have this relations without the intent of being married. Meaning, even if you're not legally married, you still have to support the kid. And it has nothing to do with the ksuba. It has nothing to do with spousal support. So Moshe says, either because you damaged or you gave an increased financial burden onto someone else, or that's the cost of the relationship.
Don't tell Trump.
but that's just parenthetical. The last point, which is the most important for us, is Rav Moshe now extends this to modern times. Right, so if you take the literal takana according to Tosvos, it's a purely biological cutoff point. according to the way Rav Moshe's understanding the Ran, it has nothing to do with biology.
Yeah.
It's purely sociological. And the reason is up until the age of 12, people hung around the house. Afterwards, they moved out and they did stuff on their own. Either they got married or they went to work. So they weren't, it wasn't the societal norm of a woman to support her kids at that age. So therefore, the husband doesn't have to. But now times have changed. So v'lochei nirer, Rav Moshe says, it seems, la'anias daiti, in my humble opinion, barer, very clear, she'hecha she'ha'em dora yachad imbaneha, if a mother lives with her kids, afshehim yoser mishesh, even longer than 6 years, b'ratzon ha'av, with the, you know, and the father's on board with it, va'afshehim gedolim, even if they're bigger, kol zman she'ein haderech she'abonim ki'ilu yelchu laharviach lefarnes atzman, until they reach the age where it's normal for children to support themselves, sheyischayev av lazum gamo sami din mizonas ishto. Part of spousal support is you have to support those kids. Delo gari me'archeru parchi, because at the very worst, those kids are no better than extended house guests. If you have a 14 or 15 year old kid in high school, so at the very worst, he's just boarding with his mother for the next few years. So you have to, just like you have to pay for guests, you have to pay for this kid.
Or tuition.
Right, so we'll get to tuition. That's the second child. But theoretically, that should be part of it. Just like I have to pay for health insurance and food and clothing. But okay, that's something else. But theoretically, maybe I should also have to pay for tuition. V'lechein barer b'nei adam, v'lechein berov b'nei adam b'zman hazeh, with most people nowadays, uvipratt v'medina seinu, and in particular in America, shadarm kulam yachad, where everybody lives together, chayav ha'av b'mizonos banav ubinosav af ha'gedolim mitzad chiyav mizonos shala. You have to support your kids just like you have to support your wife, ad sheyu kfi aderech shaholchem leharviach, until they get to the age where people are able to work on their own. So theoretically, that would be 18 at the minimum. Like you have to be in school up until that point. So at least until you're 18, the person has to pay child support. V'im b'nei mishpachto o b'nei mishpachta ein holchen laharviach ad nisuehen. And if just the standard is that they don't go to work until they get married, az midin ola imo. So if that's what they do, that's what you do. And so you can't use meiser money for that. Just like you're not able to pay other debts with meiser money, you can't use meiser money to pay child support then, according to Rav Moshe. So Rav Moshe, again, I don't know if you want to call it a kula or a chumra. In some ways it's a kula, in some ways it's a chumra. But Rav Moshe says that child support is not biological, is not capped biologically. It's purely based on the societal or family communal norms. Rav Moshe is a chiddush. If you read the Rishonim, it doesn't sound like that. Rav Moshe tries to extend it to the Ran. Rav Moshe is pretty much a das yachid in this regard. Rav Moshe and I think the Bach also may hold something similar to this. So I believe in America, and again, I have to do some more research, but I think in America we normally accept this, that at least until age 18, even al pi halacha, you have to pay child support. Now, the thing about that is there's also the Dina de Malchusadina factor, right? So Dina de Malchusadina impacts this, right? So this is not going against any halachos. So theoretically, whatever child support laws exist in the country, as long as they don't go against halacha, then I should be bound by that. So it's a lot easier to accept Rav Moshe's opinion until at least age 18 in America than it is in other countries. In other countries, I can just speak to in Israel. I'm trying to find the primary source material. But child support laws are determined by the Rabbanut because that has to do with marriage and gittin. So Beis Din or courts there are allowed to determine, even though normally they don't have jurisdiction over financial matters, when it comes to marriage and divorce settlements and child support, they do have authorization because they have authorization over divorce itself. So in the 1980s, they extended it beyond biological age to 15. I'm still trying to figure out, I'm still trying to find out the primary literature as to why. And then I think in the either 90s or 2000s, they wanted to up it to 18. And Rav Avadia did not like that. Rav Avadia felt that was going too far in terms of the strict interpretation of Shulchan Aruch. But nevertheless, the Rabbanut passed it. And so apparently nowadays there's a wide range of opinions that, you know, there are, it's kind of left at the, I guess, judgment of the Beis Din. So if a Beis Din wants, they can decree child support definitely up to 18, theoretically even older, depending on the circumstances. And then there are some perhaps more conservative Bate Dinim that may decide to cap it at 15. Because it was never officially legislated. It's just different Rabbanim have different opinions. But and the primary...
What happens after the get?
So after the get, you mean do I have to support the kids afterwards? Yeah, yeah, so theoretically, part of the...
Sure. Alimony.
Yeah, so part of you know, part of alimony means I have to support the kids as well. Meaning I don't only have to support my wife. I have to support...
Is alimony a din
d'oraisa? It's not a din, but theoretically that's part of the ksuba. Meaning I'm not only supporting her, I'm also supporting her kids. Meaning I have to pay this woman X amount of money.
Right.
But I'm also pledging to take care of her kids, theoretically. It depends. There's how it looks
over
nowadays...
The bar, what the kids, says kids,
her
ksuba.
Kids, no, you got to say our kids, not her kids.
Yeah, and then there's a whole another thing if she has kids from a previous marriage. There's a lot of different cases over
yeah,
there.
But if she gets a divorce and the it's, let's say, $2,000, he walks in, he peels off $2,000, he paid the ketubah. Isn't that...
Right, but part of the ksuba also, nowadays at least, part of the ksuba also includes child support as well up until a certain age. So the rabbis are empowered, so the rabbis, at least in Israel, the Bate Din, are empowered to calculate and determine how much that is.
Well, that's different.
Okay, so next time I'll try to track down those primary sources just to see about how that evolved, and then we'll move on to yeshiva tuition. I think So I think that this may, depending on scheduling, this may be the last shir before Pesach. Next week I'm giving shir to the Kol Elyon and I need time to prepare.
Okay.
And then is Yontif already, as crazy as that sounds. But I'll keep you posted.
Okay, we just had Purim.